Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 11. The chapter is entitled The Symptoms of Living Entities. And today we have text 20. Yasham name pavanam anga karma.
Yasham name pavanam anga karma.
Stityud bhava prana nirodhamasya.
Stityud bhava prana nirodhamasya.
Ilavatare pshita janma prasad. Vanyam giramitam vibriyan nadirai.
Vanyam giramitam vibriyan
nadirai. Yasham name pavanam anga karma.
Yasham name pavanam anga karma.
Stityud bhava prana nirodhamasya.
Stityud bhava prana nirodhamasya.
Nilavatare pshita janma vasyad. Vanyam giram tam vibriyan nadira.
Vanyam giram tam vibriyan nadira. Yasham. In which literature? In which literature?
Na.
Na.
Na. Me.
Me.
My. Pavanam.
Purifying.
Omga.
Omga.
O Uddhava.
O Uddhava.
Karma.
Karma.
Activities.
Activities.
Sthiti.
Sthiti.
Maintenance.
Maintenance.
Udbhava.
Udbhava.
Creation.
Creation.
Prana Nirodham.
Prana Nirodham.
And annihilation.
Annihilation.
Asya. Of the material world. Vila Avatara.
Among the pastime incarnations.
Dipshita.
Desire.
Janma.
Janma.
Appearance.
Appearance.
Va.
Va.
Or.
Shat.
Yeah.
Is.
Vandyam.
Barren.
Yiram,
vibration.
Tam,
this.
Vibriyat, should support.
Na,
not.
Dira,
an intelligent person. Translation and purport by the followers of Zavangrace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Uddhava, an intelligent person should never take to literatures that do not contain descriptions of my activities, which purify the whole universe. Indeed, I create, maintain, and annihilate the entire material manifestation. Among all of my pastime incarnations, the most beloved are Krishna and Balaram. Any so-called knowledge that does not recognize these activities of mine is simply barren and is not acceptable to those who are actually intelligent. Please repeat. My dear Uddhava, an intelligent person should never take to literatures that do not contain description of my activities, which purify the whole universe. Indeed, I create, maintain, and annihilate the entire material manifestation. Among all of my pastime incarnations, the most beloved are Krishna and Balaram. Any so-called knowledge that does not recognize these activities of mine is simply barren and is not acceptable to those who are actually intelligent. Purport. The words Lila Avatare Pshita Janma are very significant here. The Lord's incarnation for executing wonderful pastimes is called Lila Avatar. And such wonderful forms of Vishnu are glorified by the names Ramchandra, Nrsingadev, Karma, Varaha, and so on. Among all such Lila Avatars, however, the most beloved, even to this day, is Lord Krishna, the original source of the Vishnu Tattva. The Lord appears in the prison house of Kamsa, is immediately transferred to the rural setting of Vrindavan, where he exhibits unique childhood pastimes with his cowherd boyfriends, girlfriends, parents, and well-wishers. After some time, the Lord's pastimes are transferred to Mathura and Dwarka, and the extraordinary love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan is exhibited in their anguished separation from Lord Krishna. Such pastimes of the Lord are Ipshita, or the reservoir of all loving exchanges with the Absolute Truth. The pure devotees of the Lord are most intelligent and expert, and do not pay any attention to useless, fruitless literatures that neglect the highest truth, Lord Krishna. Although such literatures are very popular among materialistic persons all over the world, they are completely neglected by the community of pure Vaishnavas. In this verse, The Lord explains that literatures approved for the devotees are those that glorified the Lord's pastimes as the Purusha avatars and the Lila avatars, culminating in the personal appearance of Lord Krishna himself as confirmed in Brahma Samhita. Ramadi Murdishu Kala Nain Krishnan Nanda Vataram Ataro Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramapumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Najami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who manifested himself personally as Krishna in the different avatars in the world in the forms of Ram, Ashina, Vamana, etc., as his subjective portions. Even Vedic literatures that neglect the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be ignored. This fact was explained by Narada Muni to Srila Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedas. Even when the great Vyasadeva felt dissatisfied with his work. Yashyam name pavanam anga karma studyud bhava prana nirodam asya ilavatare pshita janma vashad ranjam giram tam vibriyan adhira. My dear Uddhava, an intelligent person should never take to literatures which do not contain descriptions of my activities, which purify the whole universe. Indeed, I create, maintain, and annihilate the entire material manifestation. Among my pastime incarnations, the most beloved are Krishna and Balaram. Any so-called knowledge that does not recognize these activities of mine is simply barren and is not acceptable to those who are actually intelligent. Om Ganatim Arandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umitam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurubai Namaha. Like within the last week or 2 weeks, someone gave a Bhagavatam class, and I can't remember who it was, but they made an interesting point that the philosophy that's presented in the pastimes bring us to the platform where we can appreciate the 10th canto, where we can actually enter into an understanding of that. And then the 11th canto, maybe someone can remind me, maybe someone here made the point, I don't know. But the 11th canto is...
Nanda
made the point, okay. Nanda's at home now listening on the radio. So the 11th canto is kind of like a recap or a summary of what took place in the first 9 cantos. I think I got it right. I think she also gave a reference. Do you remember what that was, Ragatmaka? As one of the previous acharyas, I think. No? I'm pretty sure that was there. I was asking Nagaraj after Mangalarti today because I thought he was the one that gave it, but he didn't. But he'd heard it, but he couldn't remember. So anyway, but it does seem significant. Now, does this seem like a little bit of a deja vu to devotees? Something that was covered previously in the first 9 cantos? You're nodding your head, Adi Dave. What does it remind you of?
Since you remind me, ever since I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, it was all like you read Prabhupada's books, you don't even read newspapers. You know?
Yeah.
You just focus on Prabhupada's books.
So that's there, but there's also something in the Bhagavatam itself, in the pastimes, that this is quite. It seems to be a good recapping of it. Agatmaka?
No, I was thinking of that verse about literature that is not about the topics of Krishna. It's for crows. What is it?
Yeah, it's Tadvayasham Tirtham Shanti Manasa. So that verse, well, it's amazing. You came up with that one. This is a whole pastime. Where, well, it begins with Srila Vyasadeva in his hermitage at Samyaprash, right near Bajrakashram in the Himalayas. And he's meditating, you know, because of his self-realized position, he can foresee the anomalies that are about to occur in Kali Yuga. So out of compassion, he starts really focusing, what should he do about it? And then he comes up with an understanding that actually the sacrifices that are presented in the Vedas could really help matters, help keep the disturbed people a little bit more peaceful, much less opting towards sinful life, which creates even more disturbance, more heavy reactions. So then he divides the Vedas into four to make it more accessible. He's got his disciples that he puts in charge of each one of the Vedas. And he also compiles the Mahabharata for less qualified personalities. But then after all of this work, and he really worked hard at it, you can imagine all the energy that he put into it, he wasn't satisfied. And he couldn't really, what's going on? He just felt down. He felt despondent. Anybody ever feel that way? No. Adidev has never felt that way in his entire life. Maybe it's because he's so Krishna conscious. But Vyasadeva, he's an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's feeling down. So something's going on here. And it finally occurs to him that maybe it's because I didn't speak about pure devotional service. I didn't put enough emphasis on glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then guess who shows up right about at that time? Narada Muni. And so he helps solidify this realization. He gives him some pretty strong instructions. And one of them, there's two famous verses, 1:5:10 and 1:5:11, that, as a matter of fact, when I was a brand new bhakta, because I'd been a hippie carpenter before I joined, I got the assignment of putting up this display in the temple store, and it was all based upon 1:5:11. So let's recite these. Now, some of you may know them by memory, but maybe you don't. But I'll give the Sanskrit, and then if you know it, chant along. Pretty powerful. But it also opens quite a door of understanding, and also the purporting previous to this verse and subsequent to it of the importance of Bhagavatam, but also the importance of staying away from even the Vedic literatures that don't focus on the personality of Godhead, his glories, his pastimes. So, Nayadvachastitrapadam Harejasho Jagad Pavitram Praganitakarhichit Tadvayasam Titam Ushanti Manasa Nayatraham Sa Niramantishakshaya. For those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto places of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So now there's a question, why is it that these all-perfect persons don't derive any pleasure there? So the pastimes of Krishna, why are the all perfect persons so interested in that? And here's a nice excerpt from a purport to that verse. Such spiritually advanced men are also called manasa because they always keep up the standard of transcendental voluntary service to the Lord on the spiritual plane. Of course, this is part of their service to hear and chant Shravanam, Kirtanam. this completely forbids, okay, because they always keep up the standard of transcendental voluntary service to the Lord, the spiritual plane, this completely forbids fruitive activities for gross bodily sense gratification or subtle speculation of the materialistic or the material egoistic mind. When the library party was going out, I guess it started in the, like, what, about 70, 74, 73, something like that. 72? 73, yeah. And so they were going, there was quite a team, and it mostly were quite educated. Devotee Seisha was one. He was on that party. Sureshwar, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Mahabodhi. Oh, yeah, he was big, I heard. Kalakanta. So they would go and they would try and sell books to the libraries and to the professors. And also Satyut Maharaj, he would also have programs and try to link, you know, the professors of religion and philosophy, kind of help them develop a favorable attitude. And as he got into it more and more, he realized that he was at a distinct disadvantage, because these professors oftentimes would focus on the Upanishads and the different Puranas, and he realized that he didn't have such an understanding of them. So then he started doing the research, which culminated in readings in Vedic literature. But as he was doing the research, Srila Prabhupada gave him a formula. He said, okay, so you're doing this, you can read these books at a service, but make sure that 50% of your reading is within my books. So just kind of as a prophylactic against getting affected. And one of the devotees on that team that was doing the research for readings in Vedic literature, he read Sankaracharya's Sarirakya Bhashya, which was the Sankaracharya's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And this devotee became just completely overwhelmed. I won't mention any names, but he became so despondent. He actually started meditating on suicide because it was so heavy. So these warnings, you know, that Prabhupada gives us to his books. Now, that, there are other, like Upanishads and Puranas that, you know, prior to the Srimad Bhagavatam, but they have much more of an emphasis on dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And the problem with that is that it influences us to identify more and more with the gross and subtle bodies as being ourselves. And this is actually the root cause of all despondency. As Prabhupada points out in the purporting of this section in the fifth chapter of the first canto. So, and what to speak of non-Vedic literature that's out there in the world. Now that is like full-on heavy-duty sense gratification, both subtle and gross. That's the emphasis. So where does that lead us? But there's this caution about, and Adidev Prabhu, he brought up the point about how Prabhupada wanted us to primarily focus within his books. Now, I know of quite a few examples of devotees that even in the Bhakti Shastras, those that do focus on Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, but they're outside of Prabhupada's books, if they don't have sufficient level of maturity, they get sidetracked. One, maybe in their commitment to Srila Prabhupada. I know there are many devotees that are in the academic realm, we kind of have that academic mindset, And they start studying outside of Prabhupada's books, and then they end up going through a crisis of faith. And it's a very common phenomenon. So it seems that for someone to read outside of Prabhupada's books, you know, within the Vedic literature, within the Bhakti Shastras, there has to be a very, very deep understanding of the stature of Srila Prabhupada. You know, what he did, how he fulfilled the predictions, as this Senapati Bhakta, you know, who came and he performed Mission Impossible to the max. Piti Viti Achayata Nagaradi Gran Savatra Pachara Mora Habinam. So he brought to every town and village the chanting of the holy name. I think it's a worldwide phenomenon. Any place you go in the world, it's really comforting for a devotee. He knows that he can go anywhere and he can find a place to stay and he can get prasad. In fact, any major city in the world, you know, you don't have to worry about it. You know, there's a temple. So it's quite reassuring. But who did that? Srila Prabhupada. You know, yeah, he utilized the translation method called Bhava Artha, where he would translate out of realization. He would adjust the translations to meet the needs in a compassionate way of you and me and hundreds and thousands of others, millions. Now there's, I think now there's 5 million, 5.25 million books that have been published from the beginning of ISKCON. So that's like an amazing number of books. There was one devotee, what did I say? I said 5.25, 525 million. That's what I meant to say. Okay, sorry about that. Space out. Thank you, Keshava. You're always taking care of me. So that's a lot of books. You know, I distributed in the Smoky Mountain National Park back in the early to mid-90s. And there was a Vaishnavi that was doing the correspondence at the beginning of the Krishna Institute. And she worked with us in Mayapur for about 5 or 6 years. Really competent lady. And one of her friends gave her a Bhagavad Gita that she'd gotten in a used bookstore. And like Vijay was telling, I think it was Vijay, was telling about how he would sign the books. You know, and so I learned that little strategy from Vijay. And so, like, here we are now. Like this probably was about, it was actually late 80s. I started distributing and did it for about 6-7 summers. And so I got a book. She sent it to me. And it had my name written in it. You know, she was living up in North Carolina. So it's remarkable, you know, how this message has been propagated and who's behind all of it. Who melted the hearts of all of us? Srila Prabhupada. So that's another very powerful point, you know, that we should stay as much as possible within his books and recognize, you know, the amazing thing that he's done worldwide and also the amazing thing that he's done with our lives and have an incredible level of respect and love for him. Can't underestimate the importance of that. I mean, there's many, like I think many of you know that I ran the Mayapur Institute in Mayapur for many years, and there are many sannyasis that teach Shastra that don't quote outside of Prabhupada's books, just to kind of drive home this point. It's kind of, it seems almost fanatical, but it seems to me that, this is my understanding, these devotees do this kind of also to send a message out, stay within this realm as much as possible and understand this thoroughly. Prabhupada, I think it's the third to the last paragraph, in the first purport of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that one who's very serious would do well to read the commentaries and any names of these previous acharyas. So it wasn't that Prabhupada didn't want it done. They only wanted, but the caution is that if we do this prior to our development as devotees, you know, in the development of a loving relationship with Srila Prabhupada, we may get a misunderstanding. You know, Prabhupada in the beginning often stressed, don't jump over. And that's something that's unfortunately quite a few devotees have done. I mean, they shipwrecked themselves spiritually. So, anyway, there's some thoughts on these points. This is the verse that I did this, put into this display in the 55th Street Temple store. Tadvag Vishargo Janataga Vipgavo Yasmin Patishlokam Abhadavat Yapi Namanyananta Sharjasham Gitaniyat Shinvanti Gayanti Gunanti Saravam. On the other hand, that literature, this is 1511. Oops, we are shut down. On the other hand, that literature, which is full of descriptions for the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes of the unlimited supreme lord is a different creation. For the transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution, viplavo, in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. And it's essentially what Srila Prabhupada has done, is doing, through his books, through his ISKCON Society. And it's remarkable what's taking place. I remember when I was distributing books, gosh, this must have been in the late 70s, early 80s, and there was an article that was released by Vegetarian Times. This was kind of the periodical for vegetarians. And that's, at that time, there weren't that many in America. Now there's, what's the figure now? It's like huge. But at that time, there weren't so many, but it was a huge increase from the mid-60s. And actually, Vegetarian Times attributed the increase, and I would use this when I would sell the Higher Taste. I think it was actually, no, it wasn't in the Higher Taste. But they attributed the increase in vegetarianism to the Hare Krishna movement, which was pretty remarkable. You know, this was their whole focus, trying to promote vegetarianism, and they gave the Hare Krishnas credit for it, for really changing things. I remember my father was a university administrator, he was dean at Colgate University, upstate New York, and sometimes I would go with him to take a meal at the student union, and there would be these unusual persons from India that were eating at separate tables, because my father was a VIP, we had separate tables from all the other students that were there, and the Indians, they were eating a vegetarian diet, and it was such an unheard of thing in the culture that I was raised in. So this is part of how this revolution goes on. Of course, the prasadam distribution, book distribution. But it's definitely a revolution. And we see just phenomenal results that are taking place in Russia and also in India. The current Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, so favorable to devotees. He's meeting with them all the time. I was working, before I came to Alachua, I was working with the Bhaktivedanta College and also the Krishnavanti schools in England. And they were, the Krishnavanti schools were very, very successful. Of course, they get government funding, so that helps. But on the basis of the successes that they were achieving when they inaugurated the first school, the Queen of England came. They spent something like £200,000 for the 3-hour ceremony. You know, just to have that kind of profile. You know, smart marketing. But Narendra Modi, you know, when he became Prime Minister, invited Naveen Krishna to come and meet with him. And then every January, they would have a national conference of all the leading educators. They would meet in Delhi. And Narendra Modi asked Naveen Krishna, first of all, in a private meeting, they asked him to help revolutionize the education system in India. You know what the education system in India is like, right? I mean, every spring, there's hundreds of kids that jump off of roofs of skyscrapers in India because they're so traumatized by, you know, the pressures that are put on them by the educational system. It's actually the British system. But it's not the British system that was in Cambridge, which was designed to produce leaders. It was designed to create clerks, servants, kind of like slaves of the British Empire. So it's very commonly recognized that it's not a very effective system, although we get very intelligent people coming from India here. You know, they got good educational background. So anyway, it's another way that the revolution, it didn't really manifest. You know, Naveen opted out because in India, the best schools are all profit-based schools as opposed to the non-profit. He just wanted to stick in that paradigm. Eventually it would take place, but also Narendra Modi, what is he doing? He's trying his best to stop cow slaughter with quite a good degree of success. So we can't actually say that he chants his 16 rounds or whatever, but he's extremely favorable and is guided by a dharmic understanding. That's the appearance I have, or the understanding that I'm getting from the interaction he has with devotees, which is very frequent. Okay, so I don't know, I may got off track a little bit here, but why don't we stop here? I'll read the translation again, and then maybe there's some comments or questions or chastisements. My dear Uddhava, an intelligent person should never take to literatures which do not contain description of my activities which purify the whole universe. Indeed, I create, maintain, and annihilate the entire material manifestation. Among all of my pastime incarnations, the most beloved are Krishna and Balaram. Any so-called knowledge that does not recognize these activities of mine is simply barren and is not acceptable to those who are actually intelligent. When I just make a couple points in addition to what I said. When Narada was straightening Srila Vyasadeva out, he's basically saying, you focused on these four dharmic principles, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And by doing that, one, it seems like a strange instruction to give to an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. But you've reduced your own level of satisfaction significantly. What to speak of what you've done a tremendous disservice to the world. And so basically what came of their dialogue is that Srila Vyasadeva recognized he didn't use his time properly. He put all this energy in, but what's this expression? I think it was from Stephen Covey. You did a really good job of painting the wall, but you painted the wrong wall. Anybody hear that one? So it was very misguided. So he got back on track, and that was this kind of dialogue that took place between Srila Vyasadeva and Narada Muni set the stage and formed the inspiration for Srila Vyasadeva compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, any points, questions? Reflections? Inspirations? Yes. Yes, well, I don't know your name. Back in the corner. Neela.
calling us.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I have to say nice class. I truly appreciate it. And I agree with everything you said, 100% speaking, all the way, and also with this verse. I think that one of the challenges that we have...
Can you speak your close to the mic?
I think that one of the challenges that we have, especially for me as aspiring bhakti yogi or in the science of bhakti yogi, one of the things that we can agree with, 100% speaking, that we stay within the realms of Prabhupada's books or any books that's authorized by Srila Prabhupada or GBC. At the same time, there are literatures out there, and I think this is a challenge, and I'm not expecting indirectly an answer for this, but I think that this is something that we can think about, that there are literatures out there that self-evidently that can help us in our devotional service, whether it be raising a child, or management, or even representing the movement better, or even how to sell better Srila Prabhupada's books, etc., etc. So, I'm not expecting an answer, but I think that's one of the challenges out there since we're experiencing the last vestiges of the information age. So, anyways, I just wanted to leave at that.
Well, I think that one answer, one comment at least, is that just as Srila Prabhupada gave Satyut Maharaj instruction to go 50-50. If you're going to read outside, then give 50% to my books. Kind of as a protection. I mean, there at one point, as when a book would be published within ISKCON, there was a Shastric, I think it was the Shastric Advisory Committee that used to review the book and approve it or not approve it. And then they just kind of got, I think that my recollection of the ISKCON history on that is that they got just kind of bogged down because so many boys were writing books. And so now there's a lot of books out there. I was just showing a commentary translated by a devotee to Pran Govinda. And he said, God, well, that's not what Prabhupada, how Prabhupada translated the same, and within the commentary it was a verse. Completely different understanding, more of an impersonal understanding, whereas Prabhupada translated in a very personal way. So, you know, I had a real close friend, we were Sankirtan partners for about a year and a half. And he just started reading outside, and man, he just lost it. You know, he's just not at practicing anymore. It was like a very painful downward spiral that he went. Brilliant person. I mean, he had a photographic memory of Prabhupada's books, but he also, in his mid-30s, learned Sanskrit and Bengali to translate. But he didn't stay within the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, and it was devastating what took place. Dharmaraj Trivikram had his hand up before.
Before I joined ISKCON, I already had in-depth knowledge of Mahabharata.
You still do.
Ramayana. All the Vedic literature and so forth. So when I come in ISKCON, and you know, even Bhagavad Gita, you know, so it wasn't so difficult to grasp what was going on. But I find personally that even our literatures sometimes give you more details of a certain topic within the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam might be touching on certain topics, but in synopsis. But you go in a next literature, different literature, and you get a detailed understanding of that topic. You see, so for me, I don't know about other devotees, but for me, I don't think I would ever be troubled, you know, even by, you know, going through the Puranas or something, because I know what I'm looking for, you know, if I want some more elaborate understanding to back up a certain philosophical point. But generally, you know, it stands out, the rule stands out, stick to Prabhupada books, you know. stick to Prabhupada books. One other point, in ancient India, most of the plays and movies and things were strictly based on the Ramayana and and Mahabharata and Krishna's Leela and stuff like that. They were all like that, but it was just in recent times things start to spread out and become so much more different.
Well, one thing is that we have to make our own decisions, but just the mere fact that you came to ISKCON and you'd already read Mahabharata, you read Ramayana and knew him pretty well, read Gita, so that's an indication, at least from my understanding, of what you were doing in your last lifetime. So you might not have had that as much of a risk. But here, for the most part, a lot of the personalities that Prabhupada brought into the movement, you know, they're coming from the Malecha culture. And so there's, and we see, you know, that it's been, one has to be very, very strict in order to stay. Okay, now, state the D's objecting, okay? I was just trying to get him going, and he was hiding behind the glasses and sleeping on me. And now I finally woke him up, okay. So, let's hear it. Look, give me the sauce, Stephen. I'm ready for it. Okay, generous. Okay, okay.
I was just like thinking out loud that when we make, you know, statements like what you quoted, your Guru Maharaj, or Srila Prabhupada instructing your Guru Maharaj, sometimes or many times, if you look in the context of Srila Prabhupada's giving instructions, there are like two categories of instructions. One can be general instructions and the other one are individual instructions. So, at least for me, like whenever I see these situations, I will try to understand, is it a particular instruction to this devotee, or is it a general instruction for all of us going to follow? And on many fronts, those instructions or those statements has to be qualified or immediately supported by background information so that the general audience get an idea, get a picture. Like, you know, for example, you know, talk about 50% of reading, you know, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, at least day 50-50 like that. Generally, Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, like, stick to his books. And one of the reasons for that is that Srila Prabhupada is not just an acharya. Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya. And like there's a whole book that the GBC came out with, like what that word means, founder acharya, founder hyphen acharya, that it infuses a certain potency that only certain devotees have. And Srila Prabhupada is like one of them. So whenever we stick, you know, whenever Srila Prabhupada gave something, he infuses a special potency in that literally cannot be had, you know, or had anywhere else. So sometimes when we try to go out to get information, with all it, sometimes it may appear to be, unless we are like very qualified, to take information from outside literatures, it's, at least for me, it's like an extremely dangerous thing to do. That unless like one is clearly qualified, even like Srila Prabhupada instructed some of his disciples to translate some of these, you know, the books of the other Vaishnava acharyas and previous acharyas and so forth. But as far as getting into detail to, for all these different, you know, category of literatures, it can be very dangerous. Even Srila Prabhupada himself says that, and this is there in his Lilamrita, that even if one word is changed, the whole thing can be spoiled. So, you know, that's how dangerous our tiny mentality in Kali Yuga can put us. So, for me personally, I would feel very safe to just take care. Sometimes if we do, and even like whenever I speak, sometimes I would give reference to some Puran or something, but I make sure that that reference is like quoted by Srila Prabhupada's disciples in some line of authority that, you know, brings about. So I just want to share those thoughts.
Yeah, I hope I didn't send out a confusing point. This whole thing with Satsrupa Maharaj, when he was writing, doing the research on readings in Vedic literature, Prabhupada suggested that he do reads outside but then 50%. He wasn't saying everyone should do 50-50. But if you have, you know, for service, if you go outside, you should protect yourself by, and it might have been a specific instruction, but generally speaking, we see the history that when devotees start studying outside, it's oftentimes they get shipwrecked. And, you know, not that it happens to everybody, but the sadhana goes down, and maybe that's also an important factor, you know, to have really strong sadhana if we're going to go outside. But part of that sadhana also seems to be regularly associated with Srila Prabhupada through his books. And no hard and fast rules, but it's definitely there's some risk factor. And we see that because there's so many examples.
Yes.
I mean, so many. And it's scary.
Yes, really scary.
Yeah. So.
Oh, it's not that scary.
Well, the point is when
that's
you
a
see
scary
somebody,
cancer.
If you see someone prior to doing that, and how they're thriving in their spiritual lives, and then they go outside and start studying and then see what happens to them, it's scary.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so many people can find a rationale to do so many things. You don't just need a bunch of intellectual gobbledygook to do that. I mean, people, you know, to put it in ISKCON terms, people bloop for so many reasons since the beginning of ISKCON. And in the early days, they weren't doing it because they read 50,000 different versions of Mahabharata to do it. Maybe they just did it because, you know, there's a interesting person sashaying down the street and suddenly they've got a new realization of what they should be doing with their time. So there's always a reason, there's always an excuse, there's always a motivation to do whatever you want to do. As far as, it, you know, Prabhupada, he's the founder of Charidiskan, so if we're like following in Prabhupada's line and serving within this institution, he's the founder of Chari, so it's dedicated to his presentation of how to engage in Bhakti Yoga. So if we're, you know, like, if we're giving a class or representing ISKCON or claiming to be a follower of Prabhupada, yeah, we definitely should have Prabhupada as the central reference point. And so, you know, you can make a formula 50-50, but the principle is, you know, if you're not focused on Prabhupada as a central reference point and you're engaging all these other intellectual variations on whatever the topic is, then what are you going to compare it to? It's going to be your central reference point. So if you want to be a follower in Prabhupada's line, you want to engage in the ISKCON family in a faithful way, then you should have a very clear idea of what that Prabhupada reference point is, and then all this other stuff is, you can be compared to that as your balance. Okay, I'm rolling, in case you hasn't gotten yet. So one last thing is, there's all kinds of different ways to look at everything. The conditional energy facilitates that, and if you build the intellectual energy, it gets a little subtler, you know, but it's not like this is new. It's not in the West. It's not Kali Yuga. There's a million different schools of thought in Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga. There's all kinds of schools of thought in India. My last point is, I remember I was talking to Mahamati way back in the day, back in LA in the 90s, and this is in the first astronomy, though Prabhupada did mention this. There's impersonalists, you know, and it's very culturally, it's well established in the Indian context, where, you know, basically your philosophical intellectual bearings is kind of very impersonally tinged. But then you take the bhakti in a cultural sort of way. It's sort of like something to do. You know, but the real goal is eventually to realize some impersonal realization. So, yeah, we should always be on guard. And, you know, 50-50, whatever you're, you know, however you want to strategize. Yeah, you know, if you want to follow Prabhupada, you gotta be very aware of what Prabhupada's actually saying and teaching. And then maybe you can, you know, see how these other things relate to that, if you would like to.
People can read Prabhupada's books and nothing else and yet get different philosophies. We see that people have different movements just reading Prabhupada's books.
I also, well, I used to work in an ashram library that was non-denominational, and I read all sorts of different things before that. And I think that you're right, though, that it's no more an internal moral compass that leads you, because anything can lead you astray. But I was wondering, actually, my question is, what's the difference, semantic difference between dravinam and artha? Because I know dravinam also means wealth. I didn't know if it was like a deeper spiritual wealth, or if anyone knows.
Can you speak a little closer to the mic?
It's, I know artha means wealth, but also dravinam means wealth. And I don't know if someone knows, like, it's more of the semantic difference.
Our Sanskrit is not here today.
I don't know, I just figured, I have a feeling that it means more like a deeper spiritual wealth in some way. Like, you know, Mitra means friend, and then, like, Sakhi means, like, a kind of closer friend to Krishna.
Gotcha.
It's usually both ways. I don't know whether,
I've seen both Jhanavan and Artha used in both ways, material wealth and spiritual wealth. Yeah, it's used, I don't know what how the root is different, but in our shastras it has been used in both ways, Artha as spiritual or material world, and Dhanam as well.
Ragatmaka has a point.
I remember years ago I read a Vyas Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada by one of his disciples, Sannyasi, and he cited that verse about such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, that this was Sukadeva Goswami predicting Srila Prabhupada's purports, Srila Prabhupada's first three volumes that he created such literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. And these words are directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. So whatever that's worth.
Hare Krishna.